We're in week three of this teaching series called Like a Child, and the entire premise of this teaching series is extremely simple. It's extremely basic. It's, look, kids receive things, especially young kids, with great joy. They're like ready to like open up their arms. And I gave an example of last week. Our kids were here. A friend shows up with a brand new game. It's wrapped in plastic. And they looked up and say thank you. And they ripped it open. They started to play. No questions. How much did it cost you? When can you open it? Why did you get me this? Are the parts edible? No questions. They're like, thank you. They received. So as we're going through this, I hope that a lot of our cynicism as adults would start to diminish a little bit, especially when it comes to the kingdom of God and God's ways, that all those arguments that we have, we've gotten really good at structuring our arguments against stuff, right? You can find anything you want if you're against something, and you can go and pull it. So that in this we would receive like a kid, right? Like a child. Opening quote for today comes from Albert Einstein. And he says that he who can no longer pause to wonder and stand completely in awe is as good as dead, and his eyes are closed. I think it's applicable specifically for this series if we stop being awed by God's word. Some of us have heard it since we were like this big, right? And some have like that t-shirt that has that Bible verse that you grew up with. And I understand some of us don't come from that background. But the encouragement, the challenge for all of us is what we're hearing through this. Just receive it. Let it do something in here that only it can do. Whether it's the first time you've heard it or the 100th time. Let the simplicity of it leave you in awe. Receive the kingdom. Accept God's kingdom like a little child accepts things. This is the one verse that is pushing us through the entire series. Mark chapter 10, verse 15. You must accept God's kingdom like a child accepts things. Title for today's message is Jesus Forgives Me. Simplicity in that. When there is a separation between our relationship with God because of our decisions, because of our sin, because of our selfishness, because of our pride, because of all these things that we struggle with, it puts a gap between us and God, and we're alienated from a relationship with Him in a way. And when He forgives us, when He embraces us as His sons and as His daughters, it brings that brokenness to restoration. We all need restoration in our lives. Especially like this, like vertically, God, you, me. We need that restoration. But if you think about your life right now, there are broken relationships. And what happens in a broken relationship? There's a gap, right? There's a chasm, whether it's a mom or dad, a sister, a coworker, a neighbor. When the relationship is broken, it causes a chasm. You're on this side, and they're on that side. We all want restoration. It's healthy for us. So we're going to talk about specifically today what that looks like. Vertically. So again, title for today, Jesus Forgives Me. We're going to look at Colossians chapter 2, verses 14 and 15. And the author of this book in the Bible is a guy by the name of Paul. And he writes to a church in a place called Colossae. And that is where the book Colossians comes from. And this letter that he writes to the people in Colossae is a letter where he kind of came and he started up a church, kind of like what we're doing here in Uptown, where we're starting up this church. And then Paul stays there for a season. He gives them some teachings, and then he goes away. And he kind of leaves the church in the hands of some leaders. And these letters that we read are him writing back to his people and saying, hey, here are some things that I've heard. And I want to encourage you in these things, but then here are some areas of opportunity. So be on guard. So as we hear these words today, it's as if Paul is writing to our church today from then. And every single word is applicable. So he wants to remind the people of the goodness of God and his forgiveness. And he says, because we broke God's laws, we owed a debt that listed all the rules we failed to follow. But God forgave us of that debt. He took it away and nailed it to the cross. In this way, he disarmed the spiritual rulers and authorities. He shamed them publicly by his victory over them on the cross. Okay, there's a lot here. A lot here. He's writing to people who are already connected to the church. I know there are some folks who are sitting here who are like, you know what, I'm trying to find out what this means. I don't really embrace it all. I don't get it. Guess what? That's cool. That's beautiful. Bring all of your doubts and all of your questions and that stuff that you don't get. And in some of our hearts that we don't want to get for whatever reason, you know what? We're good. We welcome all that because we want to receive like a child, and we want to just let this word do whatever the word can do. So Paul starts off and he says, hey, we've all broken God's law. And if you're anything like me, your humanity immediately says, I have not broken God's laws. I don't even believe in God. I don't know who God is. I'm good. I do as I please. Nobody comes and invades my life. Nobody gives me wisdom. I have worked hard for this. I've gone there. I know that. I've lived this. And immediately we become defensive. And a term that we use around here often is self-sufficient and autonomous. Self-sufficiency is everything I need is in me. Like I do life by myself and nobody comes and shares wisdom. And here's a barometer and a gauge to see if we're autonomous or self-sufficient. A good barometer is, are you open to people sharing wisdom? Or when somebody shares wisdom, do you like bow up immediately and you're like, get out of my face. You don't pay my rent. You don't know me. Shut up. So that's one barometer. Another barometer about self-sufficiency and autonomy is when life is really chaotic and messy and weighing down on us. In a variety of ways that does, right? The reaction is, I can handle this by myself, and you're like drowning in a pool, to give you a metaphor, and instead of you reaching out and asking for help and saying, please, somebody come and grab my hand, throw the what's called the flotation device in. Instead of doing that, we're like, no, this is my pain. I'm going to carry it. I don't need anybody. So those are a couple of barometers of what this looks like. So Paul's saying, we've all broken God's laws. We all fall short of what he's asked us to do, right? All of us, we're on this level playing field. And then there's good news. He says, what Christ did on the cross, Christ, the Son of God, Jesus, what Christ did on the cross for humanity saves us from that. And perhaps you've heard that 285 times. It never stops working. It's not passive. It's at work right now. And the way we fail to love our families and the way we fail to love our neighbors and the selfishness and the lust and the greed and the critical hearts and the judgment we impose on people separates, it alienates. And the good news is, I've paid for all that. It's been paid for, the debt. So we accrue a debt, our sin accrues a debt, our selfishness, our greed, our pride, our lust, our backstabbing and lying and judgment of people. Because that's not loving others, right? All those things I just listed, is self, 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 self. So it alienates us from God. But in his goodness, compelled by love, don't miss this. He's compelled by love, Jesus. Compelled by love to do what? To take the debt, like the ledger. If you have any financial background, there are ledgers and you place a debt, an amount, or a credit. But there's a ledger and it's like, got it in the black, in the red, right? So this is what Jesus Christ does. And this is a picture that Paul is painting here, that the debt, the ledger, Christ took it. He put it in his hands. He went to a cross and the ledger is like in his hands, wadded up, your ledger, my ledger, past, present, and future. And it's wadded up in his hands and he holds it when the spike, when the metal spikes are piercing him to a piece of wood. He bleeds and his blood cleanses us. His blood forgives us. The debt has been thrown away. There is no record of it. And here is the beauty of what we're speaking about today. Very simple. Receive like a child. Jesus forgives me. Now, this message will only mean something to us if we understand how broken we are. Does that make sense? Like, for those who think that we have no need of God, you're sitting here and you're listening to this and you're like, big deal if he forgives me or not. I am self-sustainable. I don't need anything or anybody. So to those who struggle with that a little bit, this message of grace seems empty. Nobody needs to cover my debt because I cover my debt well. Look at my bank account. Look at my education. Look at my friends. Look where I live. Look what I've experienced. Look where I've been for. And we bring out all of these material and superficial things that mean very little in a spiritual sense, that leave us hanging high and dry when it comes to our relationship with the Father. And the beauty of it is, I pay the price for you. Like, he covers the debt, sticking with the words he says. And not only does he cover the debt, but he leaves enough in the account, if you will, where we will never accrue a debt again. Do you guys see the beauty of that? Not only does he pay what we owe right now, but his work on the cross, his sacrifice, his love that compelled him to do that, leaves it so that there is never, ever, ever, ever a debt again. That is the beauty of him forgiving us. Psalm 103, verse 12, says that he cleanses us, he cleans us and forgives us. Let me do that. Forgives us from our sin as far as the east is from the west. It is forgotten. It's not just put away, like, kind of, you guys remember liquid paper? Like, you would make a mistake and you couldn't erase because you didn't have an erasable pen back in the days, whenever that was. And you would take a little bottle of liquid paper. You got to be old like me to remember this. Some of you may not remember. And then you take the liquid paper and then what do? You brush it on there. The error is still on there, right? You covered it up, but the error is on there. Jesus says it's forgotten. I'm not keeping it in a drawer to pull it out and hang it over your head. The pain that we've caused, the lies, the greed, the lust, the selfishness, put it all on the table. He's like, nothing repels me. Nothing. That's the beauty of grace. We do nothing but receive like a child. He says that the work that he has for us is to believe. Not to go and jump through a spiritual hoop at church. If you go to a church or you have ever visited a church where they ask you to jump through hoops and give more and volunteer more and do more, 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 more in order to receive, then it's not Jesus at work. Because Jesus at work says, I came to the bottom and I meet you at the bottom and then I lift you up and I push you all the way up. That's the beauty of grace. That's the beauty of him forgiving us. Our sin accrues debt. Jesus holds it, forgives it. His blood erases the debt. And now what do we do? celebrate that somebody loves us so much that he would lay down his life. John 15, 13 says that there is no greater love than somebody would lay down their lives for another. Now, personalize that for a little bit. Who would you lay down your life for? Take me. I lay down my life. Who would you do it for? Maybe one person in your life? Maybe that nephew you really love? Maybe that mom, maybe that dad, like, I'm just going. No pain for them. I take it all. Who would you lay down your life for? Let me make it a little bit more real. In Romans chapter 5, it tells us that Jesus laid down his life for his enemies. Like, we wouldn't do it, or we would think about it extremely to do it for those who we love, right? But his beauty and his love, and he says, I did it for those who are against me, and those who hear my word clearly and say, I don't care about your word, I do my thing my way. Do you see the beauty of grace? You did nothing to deserve it, neither did I. We earn it. No way. And the grace comes gushing in. And our response is to celebrate his victory. He's like the general who just won the war, and he's at the tip of the parade, and he's celebrating. And we're in the procession saying, I did nothing, but I'm part of this because he chose me. So how do we respond to that? Let me personalize it again. Have you ever been given something that you don't deserve? Maybe something tangible, maybe. Something where you knew, let me set it up a little bit better, where you knew actually that you had blown it. And despite that, somebody comes and says, no, it's all right. I'm not going to hold it over your head. Let's never speak about it again, as a matter of fact. Or you expected that it would be like this, whatever it is, and you come in over here because the person's like, I got you taken care of, no worries. Does that ever happen to you? A professor may be saying, you know what? The curve's over here and I got you covered. Maybe a mom or a dad, just don't speak about it anymore. It's done. No worries. I'll pay for it. Maybe a friend where you knew you just blew it. Blew it big time. And she's like, dude, we're good. We're good. What's the response in that? Just gratitude, right? Awe? Like, really? I don't deserve that. I blew it. I messed up. Humility? I don't deserve it. I'm not worthy. And then there's deep joy, right? Like, dude, that's awesome. Thank you. As we chew on this, maybe sometime this week, Jesus forgives me all of my junk, past, present, and future, and the junk that we will create and make tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. He says, it's all gone. I forgive you. And what must you do? Nothing. Receive, believe, open your hands like a child and say, your grace stirs my heart. That's the simplicity of receiving the kingdom of God. I meet you where you're at, and I love you immensely. Here's the good news. The love that Jesus has for us is irrevocable. You're extremely smart people. What does that mean? Can never be taken away. Ever. No matter what you do. No matter where you're at. Irrevocable. It's unconditional. You don't have to qualify for it. You don't have to sign an app, check the box, get your stuff together first, and then come and apply and knock on the door and see if you even get an appointment. It's grace. Doing anything for it would punch grace in the face, right? It's free. And it's inexhaustible. It's wide, it's long, it's deep. Never ending. We will never experience a love like that here on earth. We will experience that love from a Father in heaven who says, my boy, and I'm well pleased, my girl, my daughter, my boy, right here, right now, I love you, you're mine, I know you. Because there is no greater love than when somebody would lay down their lives for another. Jesus is not the angry parent creeping up the basement stairs and you're afraid that he's going to find that you chipped the good china that they gave you. Jesus is a parent who's walking up the stairs creaking with a bottle of wine under his arm and saying, let's celebrate because you and me are friends. There's a relationship. That's who Jesus is. Grace, abundant, more than enough, flowing off of the table, pouring into the cup, and it runs over. That's grace. Breathe in, receive with joy, and celebrate with a humble heart that says, what do you have for me? Jesus, thank you because you are alive, you are at work. Thank you because we celebrate that Jesus forgives.